What up, Long Beach? Welcome back to GazetteSports.com and the one and only Sports Night, a tradition unlike any other. And we are going to be talking about some tradition this week as we come to you every week on this podcast, talking Long Beach sports. I am co-sports editor JJ Fiddler. To my left,
Mike Garabasio, also the co-sports editor. And to our far right,
to the Glenn Beck, is Tyler Hendrickson over here hanging out, staff writer, and a guy that just likes to hang out.
He's a glue guy. He's a glue guy on the roster, for sure.
I'm the Luke Walton of the crew.
Yeah. We do a lot of Long Beach sports at GazetteSports.com because we are Long Beach Sports, but we could not do any of that without the fine list of sponsors that we have on our website and in our weekly newspaper.
It's my pleasure each and every week to try and help pitch you Naples Ribco. Go to our website right now, GazetteSports.com. Click on their ad for a 50% off coupon. Go in there and get yourself some ribs for lunch. Right below them, our silver sponsor, who dream in gold, McCarty's Jewelry, here for you since 1932.
They're down on 2nd Street, which is where we will be tonight. Hopefully, we'll see you down there, depending on where you're listening. It's Wednesday, but anyway, 2nd Street, big deal. Los Alamitos Cardiovascular and Performance Vein Institute, gotta give them a big shout-out. Of course, Friedman's Appliances, lacing up your bathroom, kitchen, and any other room in your house that you have appliances in.
Oh my.
And of course, Care Jones, State Farm Agent, he wants to help you save. So let him do that. Just go to our go to the website and click those ads, and it will take you where you need to be. Support our sponsors the way they support us, the way we support you, with great Long Beach sports coverage.
Get yourself, your business, or even the thing that you're voting on the list of exclusive sponsors by clicking the contact button at the top of the page. That gets in direct contact with us, and we will let you know how you get yourself on GazetteSports.com if you know you're not a local athlete, which we are going to be talking a lot about today. We break down three topics each and every week. This week, we're going to be talking about a golf match that will not be soon forgotten. Incredible stuff over at El Dorado Park last week. We're also going to be talking about what Long Beach State women's volleyball and women's soccer need to do this weekend to make sure that they are back in the NCAA tournament this year, as both of them were last year. But first, you just mentioned it, Tyler. The tradition lives on. We are going to be down at 2nd Street tonight, Wednesday evening, to celebrate what is going to be a great week of Wilson v. Pauley. And, of course, people who went to Pauley would say Pauley v. Wilson. And I think that's what makes this rivalry so great, is that everybody in this rivalry doesn't question who they root for. You either root for Pauley or you root for Wilson. Whether you're an alumni, whether you lived in the city for a long time, it's one or the other. Because they're so close, but they're so different.
Well, certainly, and they're Long Beach's two oldest high schools, so obviously sort of by default have the biggest fan bases, both of them. But they also are the most successful across many sports, two most successful high schools that we have in the city as well.
Well, and you got to pick your sides. Do you like Freedom Riders or do you like Coach Carter?
It's tough. Because,
I mean, put it down. I mean, where do you stand?
Certainly, so many great names have passed through these schools. Obviously, we talk about it all the time. JJ mentioned, you know, it isn't just a football rivalry. Because they are the two oldest high schools, you know, these guys have been playing football against each other since 1932, when McCarty Jewelry was founded.
Humble plug.
But you know, the baseball, basketball, water polo, these rivalries go back to, you know, 50, 60 years before I was born. Wilson was founded in 1926, Pauley in 1895, obviously. So, I mean, it's interesting. You actually still run into Pauley fans occasionally who hate Wilson because Wilson was the reason that Pauley is no longer Long Beach High School. Because when there was a second high school, suddenly they each had to have a name. So they're really, like, people who know their history get really, really, really into this rivalry. I think it's kind of died down a little bit because Wilson's football team has been not at Pauley's level.
So what you're saying is that football drives this rivalry.
Well, certainly. Yeah, I mean, that's what the history of it is founded in. You know, that's what traditionally people in Long Beach show up and root for, I think, the most.
Well, and that's what draws the most people to games, and you have the band there, and you have the cheerleaders, and that's where your homecoming is. I mean, that's just the sport that kind of drives the high school experience most.
Right.
But, I mean, Wilson has certainly been able to hold the upper hand on Pauley in several other sports, and those two schools compete in a lot of different sports, and it's better that way.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that. I mean, these are, across all sports, like we said, the two best schools in Long Beach, you know, really bar none. You'll get a school like, say, Lakewood, who's got a great baseball team and had a, you know, great football team in recent years, but who, you know, just aren't going to compete in girls' soccer year in and year out for a two-decade period, who haven't done that, or basketball that consistently or whatever. You know, Wilson hasn't been great at basketball. Certainly water polo, you know, there's so many sports you can look at that that these two teams would run. We're actually going today, before we go to the event on 2nd Street, the 2nd Street Shuffle, to watch Pauley and Wilson, who are the last two undefeated Moore League boys water polo teams, playing today at Pauley at 4. So it is kind of, it tends to go that way, that usually these two teams will be right there at the top of the standings.
And look at what they did on the baseball field last year. Just unbelievable stuff between those two teams. Unscriptably good games between those two schools, and it's great when they're good together.
The rivalry is one thing. The actual games are a total another thing. And like you said, Tyler, that baseball game was incredible. Right across the street.
Both of them, the other one had a perfect game in it.
Yeah, right across the street of that game that decided the Moore League was a softball game that decided the Moore League. Just so happened to be Wilson and Pauley, you know? Mm-hmm. Even when one of them isn't playing for the title and the other one is, they always seem to run into each other. And you're right, Mike, the football does drive this rivalry, but I think that the rivalry would have died out more quickly past the heyday of local football if there wasn't the other sports filling in, like you mentioned, a baseball or a water polo or even tennis. Those girls' tennis matches between Wilson and Pauley have been very good in recent time, and those two teams have been carrying that league. So my point is, I think that when these two teams play and it means something, I think that's fantastic, not only for those teams, the league, the city, but for every school involved in the Moore League. The Moore League is better when Wilson and Pauley mean something.
Well, you sort of talked earlier about, you always bring this up, it's like when the Lakers and Celtics are both good. It's better for the NBA.
Notre Dame and college football.
Right, exactly, or, yeah. Exactly. So I do think it's that. Now, you're right, I mean, the football rivalry, these other sports have sustained the rivalry because, I mean, if we're being honest, Wilson has won one football game against Pauley in my lifetime. So that certainly isn't something you show up to. But it used to be. We're actually going to put an article up a little bit later today, and I talk about this extensively in my book. The Pauley-Wilson rivalry in football used to be the biggest thing in Long Beach. They called it the big game, capital T, capital B, capital G. and at one point, you know, in the 30s, this was a game that routinely drew 30,000 people. They used to have to play it at the Rose Bowl. A lot of people don't know that.
But say that again. I mean, I've done this a couple times, but in the past few weeks, things again. Repeat that again, starting with the number.
Long Beach Pauley versus Long Beach Wilson. I mean, back when they were playing in the late 30s, they'd only been playing for a few years, 30,000 fans would pack into the Rose Bowl, which is...
The Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but and when you think about this, you know, Pauley beats Tesoro in 2008 for CIF Championship in front of 16,000 fans. You know, it used to be a much bigger deal than anything we have in Long Beach sports now.
Even though we have so many more people now, right, and the mode of transportation is much easier.
You could actually drive yourself up there and stuff. They used to just let people in for free at a certain point because they literally had sold all of the tickets they'd bought.
So the point is, if they could get there in the 30s, you should be getting there now.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the level of football is certainly higher on the Wilson end. I mean, this was, again, their first game in 1932 was 0-0.
Are you saying the level of football comparative to the level of Pauley or the level of the league or the level across the country?
Well, no, comparative to Pauley. I mean, Wilson used to be a team that was as good as Pauley, you know, and a team that was among the best teams in the country. I actually talked to Jeff Severson, who's, you know, arguably the finest football player that Wilson ever turned out.
He
never lost to Pauley. Oh, it's not a name drop to me because I just know him. But, you know, he never lost to Pauley in 3 years of playing the Jackrabbits, and he talks about it all the time. Late 50s, early 60s, it really was even. The only thing that kept Wilson from the kind of championship success that Pauley had basically was Pauley, because it used to be in the CIF that only a league champion went to the playoffs. So Wilson would be, arguably, according to the Pauley guys, Mike Gears, you know, the All-American lineman at Pauley, he said Wilson was usually the second-best team in CIF when he was in high school. Mm-hmm. It's just they never even got a chance to get into the playoffs because Pauley would beat them by 6 points, and they wouldn't get that playoff berth or whatever, which now seems ludicrous,
right,
when we just cut down from 4 of the 7 teams in the Moore League went to the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, they used to have that kind of a history. Wilson used to be at that level of quality. You know, they turned out a number of NFL guys in those years, which, you know, obviously the team, through, you know, no fault of anyone in particular, they just aren't a football school now the way that they used to be. They used to be a huge football school.
So high quality within the city, high quality within the state.
They're
two of the best teams in the state. What I'm getting at is, because there's more schools, because there's more colleges even, is the ticket less valuable? Not just because the quality is lower, but is high school sports, or specifically high school football, have less people at it because there are more games, more schools, more levels of football that also get money now? Because back then, what, it was USC, UCLA, and the high schools.
Right.
Now you've got all of these JUCOs. Now you've got San Diego State playing in a arena.
You had LBCC. You had a lot of those schools back then, too. I just think there isn't the pride now that there used to be. You know, it used to be that there were 2,500 students at Poly, but every single one of them went to the football games. Now, if you imagine student population of 4,500 at every Poly football game, we've never seen anything like that in my lifetime, certainly. No. And it's the same thing for Wilson. You know, they'll sell out a big game. But, you know, the Poly Lakewood game that we always get excited about, that 11,000 people show up to it, that just used to be average attendance. I mean, they used to have stands all around the field on both sides at Vets, because 12,000 is what you'd expect to show up to any football game.
Well, I think the biggest difference is you were looking for things to do. This was before the internet, or before you could just go home and have a million HD channels to watch on your TV. So I just think times have changed to where it has to compete with more things. But you wish the community would kind of get behind it a little bit more and say, this is a big event. This is either the school that I went to, or the school that my kid or my nephew or whatever goes to. They play on the football team. Let's go support it. And I think that this tradition lives on. Second Street Shuffle thing is trying to build that sort of community support. Like, this is our game that Long Beach goes to. Everybody in Long Beach should pay attention to it. And it's a big deal if somebody wins it.
No, well, yeah, tip of the sports night cap to everybody who got involved in making this thing. Obviously, it happened last year and the year before.
Yeah, but Terry Spear and Aaron Fajar are the activity directors at these two schools. And basically, they know each other, and they decided, we want to make this a thing. And so it's more or less those two people who've really been the organizing push. But it's phenomenal. You really see what happens when just a couple people really push to make something special.
So that's going to be on Second Street Wednesday night. Obviously, if it's listening to this show on Thursday, it's going to be past. You know, you can't go back in time.
We're pretty
powerful. We're not that powerful.
Not quite that powerful.
But we'll be having the previews for that big game, Wilson and Poly. Obviously, all the way through the week, and then come onto the website Friday morning, and you can get the information on all of the local football games that are going on Friday.
Yeah, but if you're listening in time on Wednesday, the Second Street Shuffle's from 5 to 9. Come down and see us. We'll be there. Mike will be selling his book as we continue to mention on every podcast. But yeah, there's discounts. There'll be old footage from Poly Wilson games, the cheerleaders, the bands, some players, everything. It'll be a lot of fun if you can make it down there.
It's an old school pep rally for an old school rivalry, which we just absolutely love.
Sometimes at Gazette Sports, we feel a little lonely. But we love to social network. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Gazette Sports, and that's where you'll find all your football score updates on Fridays. And of course, look for us on Facebook, Long Beach Gazette Sports. We will keep you updated with all breaking news and stories right to your feeds. And hey, keep us company when we're not at sporting events.
It is literally now or never for the two women's teams over at Long Beach State. Volleyball and soccer have huge homestands this weekend to decide whether or not they're going to either make it back to the conference tournament, more importantly, make it back to the NCAA tournament. We should start at soccer, because soccer was definitely looking like they were riding high before they reached the Big West Conference Tournament. Couple close wins at home, couple overtime wins, everything going well. And then they hit a streak of bad luck that we haven't seen in the black and gold in quite some time.
They used up all their luck in the preseason was the problem. Well, last year as well, yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily always call it luck, but kind of just good fortune, good vibes. Eventually, these things turn against you. Soccer is a really tough sport, and sometimes that just happens to you, where you just get unlucky handballs and things like that and give up late goals. But Long Beach State has certainly been on the right side of fortune earlier this preseason, and of course last year in their Elite Eight run. But it's kind of turned against them at the wrong time, and now we're thrown into some questions. So JJ, I got to ask you, what's your scenario?
Well, what were you going to say, Mike?
Well, I was just going to say, it is a thing that I always find annoying about soccer, that last year when they're getting all this, what we now would call good luck, it was the character of the team and the winners on the team and a goalie who will never allow a goal. And then when things go bad, it's like, well, it's soccer. We've got no control over it.
And let's be honest, though. Some of those highlights with those saves by Caitlin Gustavez, that is individual skill.
Absolutely.
To keep some of those saves.
You could definitely look at Kelsey Wilson's game winner against Miami in the second round, though. A fantastic chass from the left-footed defender that found the back of the net. Very fortuitous. And I believe we said that in the video.
Well, in the Sweet 16, the Sweet 16 game that was played at a campus pool at UCLA, basically, just in the wetness, you saw during the game the difference between preparing for the game,
yes,
the strategic substitution, and how that kind of worked. But I think any team that won that game, you probably would have said, that was kind of a lucky situation.
Well, no, at the time we said, oh, Nicole Hubbard seized control of this game.
I was just about to say, that's a random Nicole Hubbard shout-out right there.
But if they lose it, but if they lose the game, you're like, well, it's just, you know, the luck just went the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of fortuitous bounces, back-to-back double overtime losses at home in the waning minutes of overtime, no less. Not like they scored the golden goal like 3 minutes into overtime. No,
we're talking Long Beach State.
We are talking about the end of the second overtime period of 100+ minutes into those games that the Mustangs and the Anteaters got over on the 49ers. So that sets up this: Cal Poly, Northridge, Irvine, and Fullerton all sit atop the Big West ladder in front of Long Beach State. Now, Long Beach State takes on Hawaii on Friday night at 7 p.m., and then they take on Northridge at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Northridge plays Irvine on Friday. Why is that important? Because Long Beach State has to catch one of those four teams that are in front of them: Poly, Northridge, Irvine, and Fullerton. But if Northridge loses to Irvine, they can then beat Northridge on Sunday. So that would be two wins for Long Beach, if you're following me, and two losses for Northridge on the weekend, which would switch their spots. Long Beach would make it back to the Big West Tournament, and by making it to the Big West Tournament, RPI considered, they would be set up for an at-large bid into the NC2As.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to just focus on Northridge. I think that's the team that you really have to pay attention to. That's the easiest path into the tournament. So what Long Beach State has to look at, they're down by 4 points with two matches to play. So they can get 6 points with two wins, which I think pretty much everybody agrees that they have to get their two wins. And then as long as Northridge only picks up 1 point in that Irvine game with either a tie or a loss. So a tie or a loss against Irvine, then Long Beach State, if they beat Hawaii, controls its own destiny, head-to-head with the Matadors at George Allen. All they have to do is beat them, and they're definitely going to get that at least that fourth spot. There's still an outside shot that they could finish first, which shows you how jumbled these Big West standings are with a lot of capable teams at the top. But I think Northridge is the team to really watch to try to knock them out of the tournament.
That's who you play on the final day. That's who you want to be playing.
Right.
So, for sure, a shout-out to Ryan Leaky Pipes, the frequent contributor, longtime friend of the show, for working his magic and putting that together in a matter so neat it's almost a graph. To me, I mean, essentially what you're looking for if you're a Long Beach State fan is win both of them, and then you kind of assume if you win both of them that things go well for you.
Let the chips fall.
You'll already know on Sunday going in. But definitely don't worry about the other scenarios. Win your games and see what happens. Because let's be honest, even if they don't make the tournament, there's still a real at-large possibility. But you need to win those last two games.
See, then there's been some debate about this, because I think that the soccer program feels that that's the case. I actually don't really think they've got much of a shot of getting in if they lose to... If they lose to one of these teams, I really don't think that they get in.
But if they win the two and still don't make it,
it's possible. But to me, does the fifth place team from the Big West ever go to the NCAA tournament?
Well, when they have that kind of RPI and the quality
RPI,
wins that they have.
If they win the two, it's certainly a possibility. But if they lose one of them, I think there's certainly no shot.
And even
if
their RPI is
in the mid-40s. They would be on the outside looking in if they don't make the Big West tournament.
Yeah.
They would be on the outside looking in. Because you're saying unprecedented on both counts. If they were to lose and make it, or if they were to win both, not make the tournament, and still make it.
But you would hope that the ways in which they've lost, that kind of heartbreaking overtime
thing,
might have an
impact. But I think if they're doing that much thinking about it, I think your real hope is that they look at the RPI, they remember in the Elite Eight, and the committee just puts you in. Because if they're really thinking about it, I don't think a team that performed this badly in terms of wins and losses in the Big West gets that consideration.
Well, it remains to be seen. But obviously for Long Beach State fans, you hope that they just win and get in, and you don't have to worry about it.
Exactly, because I think we can all agree if they get to the tournament, unless they lose 3-0 in the semifinal game, I think they look fine if they get into the Big West tournament.
Yes, I think that's what everyone would assume. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day on Sunday, no matter what happens on Friday, both between Northridge and Irvine, and also between Long Beach State and Hawaii, because it's going to be senior day. So that's going to be a nice, beautiful afternoon at GAF. Get out there at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
George Allen Field.
Also, two huge games in the Walter Pyramid this weekend. The Long Beach State women's volleyball team suffering through a rash of injuries, but as Brian Gemellaro said this week and continues to say, they will not give up. They are still sitting in second place in the Big West. They are taking on some pretty tough competition up against this weekend. Number 9 or number 8 Hawaii?
Currently number 9 Hawaii.
And then taking on Northridge as well, who is the team that beat Long Beach earlier this year. Northridge just very inconsistent season, so they're winnable games. But it's going to be tough.
I mean, I actually don't. I mean, if we're being honest about the situations, I kind of think it's too late. I don't think that the Hawaii match is winnable. I think even if they win these games, it's kind of, I think, too late to try and salvage the season, because they really need that first place spot. They've got 4 losses in conference. Hawaii's not going to lose another 3 games, even if Long Beach State does beat them.
So by salvage, you mean to make it to the tournament, NCAA? Because Big West Volleyball does not have a tournament.
No. So if you can beat Hawaii and Northridge, you can hopefully make the case that maybe you belong as the last at-large in the NCAA tournament. The RPI is so low at this point, and really the chances of them beating Hawaii are... Whitney Wilkerson left the team this week, or she left the team recently, so they're down another... They're down another player. We hadn't mentioned Whitney Wilkerson's not on the team anymore. It's a thin roster to try and go up against a stacked Hawaii team that lost their best outside hitter in Jane Crossan and hasn't even missed a beat.
I will say, and I don't know how much this adds, but Hawaii was down 2-0 at home against Pacific. Obviously, they roared back and won the match in 5. But
That's been their MO.
They're slipping a little with their comfortable lead in the conference. Maybe they're going to overlook an outmanned and outgunned Long Beach State team.
Because of the history between those two teams, it's difficult for me. Because, like, they've overlooked other teams, Hawaii has. They've been down 2-1 or whatever. But Long Beach State... They were not overlooking them when they hosted Long Beach State. It was like 16, 18, 17 or something in a 3-set sweep. I do think you're going to see this team work. I think it's a game worth going to if you're not going to a football game on Friday, because what Gemellaro is doing with that offense is really fascinating, and he's got to do some really creative stuff just because of the roster limitations. But should they win that Hawaii game on Friday, that Northridge game on Saturday, JJ mentioned Northridge already beat Long Beach State, that would be really interesting. But right now, I think if you've only got money for one ticket, I would suggest that you go to the soccer games.
They've got 9 girls dressed out. 9 girls. If you don't know volleyball very well, that's not a lot.
You start 7 with 6 on the court.
It's not a lot.
It's really not a lot, especially when the people you have on the court aren't your All-Americans and your top outside hitter to begin with.
So you're telling me when someone gets roofed, they're just trying, like, the first step in one of those tunnels, they just put their hands like right up next. It's like London Bridge or something over there. Tough. It's going to be strange looking, and it's so hard to see knowing the history of that program and how much they've been depleted just with injuries, left and right.
Depleted, should we open the mailbag up?
Depleted is a good word. Oh, yeah. I also think that that's dangerous. They're almost a dangerous team. At home, nothing to lose. Simplify stuff. Set it and spike it, you know, not really.
Long Beach State?
Yeah.
You think Long Beach State's dangerous?
No, in this scenario, well, a punch-drunk boxer sometimes is the best boxer, you know? Sometimes when you've got nothing to
lose,
you tend to
play. But a dog who's got his teeth knocked out has got no bite, JJ.
You tend to play better.
I'll go analogy to analogy with you right here.
I mean, it's a back and forth, it's a give and take. Sometimes it's, well, heck, we got nothing to lose, we're so loose, we'll just play our hearts out and not worry about all the little things and overthink it. But the other time is, it's like, well, they're just better and they have more talent and depth than we do. So,
volleyball is definitely a sport where you see less upsets than most NCAA sports, I think. Just because it's almost like baseball, and that it's like you get so, it's a percentages game. You know what I mean? It's a percentages game. You have a setter. You have these outside hitters. How many times can these outside hitters put it down? And I think we are outgunned in that. But I'll tell you what, JJ, I hope to God that you're right, because I would love if that turned into a classic match like we've seen so many times between these teams.
Hey, is it possible that the Hawaii teams, not just volleyball, across the board, the Hawaii teams will find the second half of seasons tougher because of the amount of travel that they have to do throughout the season?
It's actually less travel than when we're in the WAC, isn't it? Just because they're just going to California now?
It's less travel for them, but that doesn't mean that they've got the same players. You know what I mean? Like, every year, that's a new crop that needs to learn how to fly.
Yeah.
Not theoretically, but... You know what I mean?
Yeah, we get it. We'll see. Obviously, they've been successful historically, even with that.
All I'm saying is when I flew to Hawaii, I was wrecked for at least a day.
You're not a Division I athlete, no offense.
Plus, don't think
I mean, I was this close.
I got letters.
Speaking of letters, I got pats
on the back. Yeah, we got a letter in our comments section.
Speaking of letters, you can leave a comment on any story at GazetteSports.com, and if it's pretty good, we probably will read it on this show. And we actually got one on the Sports Night show, the comment left by Joe, who wants to know what would be a bigger disappointment, Long Beach State women's soccer or Long Beach State women's volleyball missing the NCAA tournament. Now, thank you, Joe, for leaving the comment. We really appreciate it. And that's a great question.
I've got to ask for clarification, as I always do. Are we talking about which team will be more disappointed, or which, in the sense of the sport, will be more disappointing? Because I think that they're the opposite answer.
Well, I totally agree with you that those are completely different answers, because one team has a lot more justification for why they're not making the tournament, whereas the other team would just chalk it up to,
The women's volleyball team can do math. They understand what the deal is. The women's soccer team right now is still thinking we're getting into. They're even thinking if we don't make the Big West tournament, we're getting in the NCAA tournament. So I think the team is much more disappointed for soccer.
I would agree. As a Long Beach State fan, supporter, alumni, somebody who follows Long Beach State sports, let's take it from that angle. Not just this weekend.
Right.
What would be a bigger disappointment this weekend? What's a bigger disappointment overall?
There can be no question to me that it would be volleyball.
I agree with you. Because the streak ends. So I think
what the streak is?
It's been 25 straight years that team has gone to the NCAA tournament. They've won 3 national championships, which women's soccer had easily the best year in the history of the program last year. And as we saw...
history of the Big West.
Right. And as we saw in the Elite Eight, and you know, when you watch those teams in the Final Four in the national championship, they were not really that close to winning a national championship. In terms of the depth and overall quality of team, women's volleyball has won 3 national championships. So a lot of those fans were there for those years. You're still looking at Misty May. Now, you know, Alex Morgan didn't play soccer at Long Beach State. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I just think there's a different culture.
Well, actually, she did.
Right, yes. Yeah, she played at Long Beach State for one game. But I just
that's great scheduling by Mauricio Ingracia.
I think you could say if Ingracia stays at that school for 20 years, in 20 years, you could say if he wins national championships and they become a premier program, you could say that soccer would be at that point. But right now, they're just used to a different thing inside the pyramid. And I certainly think that when I talked to those boosters who are around, who've been around forever, I certainly think you'd have to say volleyball.
Well, and I think within the context of this season, knowing what we know about both the teams and the tougher road it is to get in volleyball, and certainly the injuries and things, I think it would definitely be, within the course of this season, soccer would be more disappointed. But when you look at the programs as a whole, Long Beach State women's volleyball, since I've been alive, has always made the NCAA tournament.
I was 2 years old the last time they didn't get it.
Yeah, oldie. But so it would be a new thing for the university, and it's going to be a sad thing to see, and it's appearing like that is the probable outcome, and it's been disappointing to watch the entire year because you kind of knew that it was coming to an end and they just couldn't stop the negative momentum.
Yeah, it has been negative momentum for both teams. Let's see if they can turn it around this weekend at home. Hopefully you guys, the city of Long Beach, turns out for those teams and carries them to some victories in some must-win situations. Obviously, if you can't get there, get back here at GazetteSports.com. We'll have all the coverage, as always.
We we do a lot of stories at Gazette Sports every day, so sometimes it can be confusing. What did I miss? What are the new stories? Don't worry. Just sign up for our email newsletter. Scroll on the right side of the page under the Twitter and Facebook boxes. Type in your email right there, and every morning you will get all of the brand new stories that we publish, and you can just click those links and read up on all of the hot new Long Beach sports news.
Guilty as charged with the stories. Part of the new additions of Sports Night just this year is we're taking these three topics. So as you can see, we did two topics, the Wilson-Pauley rivalry and what's going on at Long Beach State right now. And our third topic is something we kind of want to take into another realm. We were at El Dorado Golf Course last Wednesday for the Moore League Girls Golf Individual Finals. Alicia Arizaga of Wilson and Jamie Gracie of Pauley were going head-to-head. Gracie had a two-stroke lead, and on the last hole, she realizes that she hit the wrong ball out of the fairway.
She hit another Pauley ball.
So as in
just
golf...
wasn't her ball.
As in golf, you call your penalties on yourself. You call your own fouls. And she noticed it on the green, went back... double bogeyed the hole, had to then win in a playoff. It was just an incredible show of sportsmanship. Head coach for Pauley, Ken Munger, said the kid's character is just unbelievable. It's unsurpassed. The head coach of Wilson, Jeff Evans, was just as glowing. He said it had to be the honesty was rewarded. Had to be one of the coolest things he's ever seen. Had to go give credit to both her as a person, her as a golfer, the Pauley Golf Program, all of the above. It was just a very happy ending to an incredible situation, something that that we had never seen before, nothing like that at least. So that had us talking about sportsmanship, specifically in high school sports. Now, I think we can all agree that sportsmanship at different levels of sports is a different issue. I think at the professional level, something you might do as a show of sportsmanship or even at the high school level, would be viewed and gone about in a different way. Would you agree?
I completely agree. I think that most bets are off at the professional level, but at the high school level, it's like, hey, this isn't really that serious. There's not money and careers on the line here in most cases.
Well, they didn't used to be until the Trinity League started hiring $150,000 a year coaches.
In most cases. but I think if you look at the example of the team that carried the softball player around the bases after
great
she
example.
Hit her home run, I would not have expected to see Albert Pujols go pick up Ryan Howard out of the first base box and help him get to first on a home run. I just would not have seen that happen.
You'd almost be upset if it did.
I was
happen.
Just going to say, would you be yeah. upset if you were an Angel fan?
Or a Cardinals fan back then, but yes, if I were an Angels fan, obviously I'd be a completely different person and one that I probably wasn't super happy with, to be honest with you.
Sportsmanship, Tyler.
If I underwent that swan-like transformation, I would probably say, nah, he's a professional athlete, he's making millions of dollars,
fair
he
play.
Can crawl his butt to first.
It's worth noting, I think, that the culture of sportsmanship is different sport to sport as well. You know, something
agreed.
Like golf, or one of the things I always love about covering cross-country is... everyone roots for each other, right? And they'll say, come on, Compton, come on, Pauley. You know, it doesn't matter what school is running by. Everyone's clapping and encouraging the kids. Whereas, like, if I saw that at a football game, I would almost find it a little bit weird. If someone was cheering, if a Milliken parent last week was cheering for Gerard Wicks as he ran for an 80-yard touchdown, and they were like, way to go, Gerard.
Well,
go
I think,
get us.
I think
it's just a little weirder.
I think it's the difference between...
physicality?
Well, not just physicality, but I think stakes and how much is invested in it. Obviously, there's a lot more money in football, as you mentioned, Mike. But I think there's also the kind of the team aspect of whether there's direct competition. Because at that football game, Milliken players were trying to tackle Gerard Wicks.
Right.
True. You're running cross-country.
Yeah,
you're just trying to run faster.
You're just trying to run against yourself.
No one's
against
trying
the force.
To hit anyone else on the golf ball or on the golf course.
Right.
Yeah. Unless it's with a golf ball.
Or unless you're John Daly or whatever.
It would have been a very bold, and in cross country, usually a non-contact sport. But I mean, I would love to see a little,
some elbows,
a little rile them up.
But,
I mean, they're already in a pack together.
But there is, and I do love this. You know, there are like even in football, if someone makes a great play, you'll generally see people from both sides applaud it. Certainly, we've seen that in baseball, both teams applauding Chase DeYoung or Chris Castellanos after he threw a perfect game, and even in volleyball, if someone makes a foot save that somehow gets back into play.
Both fan bases are going to cheer for that.
Okay, so I've got three situations here that we'll throw out, and just assume that these situations are happening in the high school setting very quickly. The first one is, you hit somebody really hard in a football game, or you knock somebody down in a basketball game and in another physical sport, even sliding into second base, you knock the shortstop over. Helping that person up, helping the opponent up off the floor. Yes or no?
Yeah, it's a Long Beach tradition. A Long Beach football player invented picking up your opponent after you knock him down.
I love it.
I don't think you have to do it, but if somebody didn't do it, I wouldn't say, oh, that's bad sportsmanship. But I think it's totally fine. It's like a good thing.
I think it's a great thing.
Agree. Certainly,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, specifically in the fourth quarter, though, I'd never help anybody up.
I was going to bring that up.
It's fourth quarter out here, kid.
I know that's your thing. If your four is up, your teammate's down.
If your four is up, you take it's a whole different situation.
But teammates should already be doing that anyway.
No,
it shouldn't be up to your opponent, but yeah.
Situation number two. You are on the road and you walk into the road locker room, and someone from the home team has left their playbook in the locker room.
You talking about football?
Any sport, basketball, whatever. I mean, obviously, football and basketball have more extensive playbooks. But let's say their scouting report on a baseball team, they've got you scouted, so it would obviously give you an advantage. There's something in their locker room that will give you an advantage. What do you do with it? Do you take it? Do you use it? Do you return it? Do you show your team that you're returning it as, we don't need this. We're going to beat them anyways.
The only reason that I would assume that I would not use it if they left it in our room would be an assumption that the other coach was pulling something like Jim Stanglin used to do at Long Beach State all the time,
yeah,
and leave a fake scouting report, yeah, in the other locker room.
Like a genius.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of work.
Or Jim Stanglin would also leave the
he'd
fake an opponent scouting report and leave it in their locker room. So he'd be like, Leon Burns says here, you ain't beat. You know,
yeah,
we're not worried about Leon Burns.
He's weak.
Right, exactly. So they, you know, coaches do stuff like that. That's the only thing. To me, if someone gives you an advantage, you take it.
Well, I don't
think that's bad sportsmanship.
I would flip through it as the coach and kind of just make sure that there's nothing, you know, offensive or over the line as far as, like, we are going to attack this person's knee or something,
uh-huh,
you know, something like that. But I would not, like, show it to my team or try to adjust from it.
They literally gave it to you.
Yeah, but it didn't come with a note that said, good luck tonight, enjoy this. It was obviously not intended.
But neither does a blown coverage. Like, isn't in football, don't you always just try and take advantage of your opponent's mistakes? And if it's in the locker room versus on the field, is that really that big of a difference?
Yeah, but I think
I know teams have done this to Pauly.
But I think
it happened to Pauly one time in the playoff game against, right, Los Al that we talk about all the time.
I think it's more about letting players decide what happens on the field. So if you get that advantage of knowing what the coach is calling and knowing what the play is beforehand,
yeah,
it kind of takes it out of the player's hands. If the player blows the coverage and doesn't execute the play correctly, that's on the player.
Yeah.
Right. And that's happening in the course of...
I see your point, but to me it's just not any different between having a better film setup or something to do. I mean, it's something that, again, if you're stealing someone's playbook or if you're stealing calls, which we've, you know, heard of that happening, obviously, in the area. You know, that certainly, to me, is crossing a line. If someone leaves something on your bench, ah.
All right, so finally,
it's a coin flip. Wait, what's your vote, JJ? You're the deciding vote.
I was saying, if I'm the head coach and I see that,
yeah,
I definitely flip through it, like Tyler said, to make sure that there's nothing glaring. Not glaring in the fact that, like, oh, I know how they're going to line up when they run their fake punt. Like Tyler said, glaring in, like, are they going to attack this kid's knee, or are we in danger in any way? Why is this here? Would be my first question. Why is this here? And I'd want to flip through to find that out. If the answer wasn't in there, if it's just plays, I would hope that my film that work that week would be good enough to where I could write that scouting report already.
But if
I should be well prepared enough to where that wouldn't help me. I should already know that stuff. So I would not go run off copies and give the opponent's scouting report or playbook to my players. I'd never do that.
But last point on this, if it were college or pro, I would be all for reading that thing and taking full advantage of it. Because it's amateur athletics, I think that's kind of less fair.
College sports is also allegedly supposed to be amateur athletics. It is the NCAA.
Just for the record, Mike stood up and turned around so he could talk into the mic right there.
So finally,
take it for what you will.
So finally, there's all these plays, the fumble rooski, all these like fake plays that you can run. I think one of the biggest ones that we've seen at the high school level, at the pro level, at the college level, whatever you want to call it, is the hidden ball trick. in professional baseball, I think it started in professional baseball, worked its way back down. We've seen it happen. We all have very different takes on the hidden ball trick.
We've heard different takes from everyone.
Also true.
That you talked to. I've heard, basically, Lakewood baseball does it all the time. Mm-hmm. Some Lakewood parents don't like it. Some do like it. Some other parents from other teams like it, and some don't like it.
And we've also seen other teams do it. Mostly it happens when it's the first baseman or the third baseman walking to the mound, talking to the pitcher, and then walking back with the ball, not actually in the run of play, as it were, where the pitcher swings around, noodle legs, throws it over the top of the second baseman, allegedly, and then they try to get the second baseman off, you know? Most of the time in the NBA or in the MLB, you see the first baseman carry the ball to the mound, fake it, and then walk back.
So there are different variations.
Yeah, I think that's very different. I think faking somebody out by yelling stuff from the dugout, or even like when A-Rod yelled I got it" when he was rounding third. Even in professional baseball, I think that's crossing a line. I think faking someone out by faking the actual act
so you're
of losing
the
ball.
So you're against the play action pass.
The what?
So you're against the play action pass in football as well.
No. I mean, are you yelling run, run, run on your sideline? Because I'm against that.
I'm just saying it's...
Your side yelling run at the defense when you're running a play action fake. I think that's over the line.
You think that's over a line, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think there's no need. If your fake is good enough, those linebackers are already taking their step forward that you need them to take. There's no need. It's just like Greg Schiano running that play this weekend for the field goal, moving all at once and then yelling boo. That's way over the line, man. Take that stuff back to Pop Warner.
I don't know. To me, as long as whatever you're doing is within the rules, and certainly there's no rules against anything she just described, I don't personally have a problem with it at all.
Well, I think that the team should be disciplined enough to not fall for it. I'm not the biggest
fan.
I'm not the biggest fan of the hidden ball trick, although I resoundingly support it in Rookie of the Year. Great. Great movie.
JJ, are you really siding against Rookie of the Year right now?
I didn't know that was coming.
It's the only time the Cubs have ever and will ever win anything. One more. But anyway, so I'm for it in that instance. But I think the where I draw the line is the foreign substance almost, or the introduction of another.
Yeah.
Device
well,
to kind of fool
look,
people, and the
that's not a line
that
you draw. That's a line in the rule book.
Okay, well then there you go, perfect. But I think the example was, and we saw Lakewood against Edison in the playoffs, where Edison was claiming that there was a piece of tape used as a second
right.
ball. To
someone
throw
had,
the
by the way, someone had
by
taken
the way,
athletic tape
that was
off
not,
them.
Not
verified. Certainly,
scene,
we certainly don't personally take a stand on that. But that was the Edison coach's claim.
We've also seen Edison do the hidden ball trick. I've seen Edison do the hidden ball trick. Not in that game.
Well, his
but
and his
done.
His
which
argument,
was hilarious to me.
The Edison coach's argument and were taped to have been used, I would agree, is the hidden ball trick is within the rules. You might find it bush league or unprofessional at a higher level or whatever, but there's nothing illegal about it. Mm-hmm. Pretending there's a second ball by actually throwing something that looks at a ball, that's against the rules.
That's against the rules.
So breaking the rules versus doing something that some people don't like but is clearly within the rules.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I to me that is a pretty clear line. I'd agree.
Can
with
we
that.
Also all agree as we wrap this up that the things that you do in those situations that we just listed, whether it be from helping a guy up to trying to fake someone out on the field or taking advantage with someone else's playbook, in all instances, whatever you do in those situations reflects on you, your program, your team, and your school. Would
yeah.
you agree with that?
So, yeah, certainly.
Okay.
Can I add one thing about the hidden ball trick? I don't think that should ever be the last out of a game. I don't think you should ever record the last out of a game.
Amen.
For the reason specifically because you are going to make the kid that you trick feel like the worst person and the worst goat of all time. So I think that's one line in high school. I mean, obviously professionally, whatever, they're paid. But right. I think in high school, to kind of like try to victimize a kid and make them a complete
yeah.
goat is kind of a little bit over the line, even though obviously you're trying to win the game, but get the hitter out. Don't yeah. do that on the last out of the game.
We want your opinion on this topic. Leave a comment in the comment section on any story at GazetteSports.com, and we might just read it on this show. That's that's it. That's all. There ain't no more for this episode of Sports Night here at GazetteSports.com, the tradition episode. And as any tradition goes, we will be back here next week doing exactly the same thing, talking about the issues surrounding Long Beach sports, because that's who we are.
I just got a fax in from Statboy who said every single thing we said today was accurate. So, good job, boys.
That's respect. And with a paper toss, this was a fantastic episode.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We got to shout out the sponsors one more time, though, because we couldn't have done it without them.
Naples Rib Company, up top on everything we do. Go to our website for a 50% off coupon on your rib lunch. McCarty's Jewelry, here for you since 1932.
Los Alamitos Cardiovascular, celebrating 31 years. Friedman's Appliances and Care Jones, State Farm agent, handling his business.
The Care Bear.
Handle your business. I mean, little Care Bear life, dude. What a throwback.
Get at us. Get your name and your company on that list of exclusive sponsors at GazetteSports.com, because all of Long Beach Sports will be looking at that advertisement. Because this is GazetteSports.com and we are Long Beach Sports. For Mike, for Tyler, for JJ.
You're JJ.
For everybody at the Gazette newspapers, pick up that Gazette newspaper this Thursday. You should do that every week, but especially this Thursday. Pick that thing up. For everybody at the newspaper and for everybody in Long Beach, we will see you in the stands this weekend, y'all. Take care.
Don't forget to go vote.